Hey, lacrosse friends, welcome once again to Lax Beat, the podcast formerly known as Box LaBeat. I am your host, Stephen Stamp. Very excited to have you along with me again this week on the show. It is a lot of fun. We have a great conversation with Cooper Perkins. You may know him as the play-by-play voice of the San Diego Seals, but he is getting to be known as the man behind laxmetrics.com. We're going to talk all about it, tell you all kinds of info, share a lot of interesting stuff, speaking with Cooper this week and his deep dive into existing and new lacrosse statistics. He does some really cool work. We also have the news of the week coming up, and you will enjoy it all, I'm sure. I'm Stephen Stamp, your host. Thanks for being with me here on Lax Beat. Enjoy the show. We have a quick go at the news this week. The big news, one of the big pieces of news in the NLL, is Dane Smith setting a single season assist record. He has 87 already through just 16 games. He's on pace for 98. It is a truly remarkable feat. There are not that many people who hit 100 points in a season, and he is actually within shouting distance of getting 100 assists. Truly remarkable. Go to IL Indoor and check out my Records Pursuit weekly column. This week is volume 3, where we talk about Dane setting that record and so much more. It's going through the end of the regular season, so you can keep tabs on all the records that might be set in the National Lacrosse League. And there's quite a handful of them that are being pursued this year. Speaking of records, Dan Dawson broke John Tavares' career assist record this past week, one game after he'd broken Tavares' games played record, at least one game that he played in. Dawson had to miss some time in between. Dan Dawson appears this week on Lacrosse Link, along with Kevin Crowley. It's a great episode. Two really interesting and fun conversations with a couple of the great righty forwards in the game. That is launching Thursday night on Lax Sports Network and the Lacrosse Link YouTube page. It's loaded afterwards on the Lacrosse Link Facebook page. So make sure you go and check out this week's episode and all the previous episodes of Lacrosse Link, your link to all things lacrosse. The other big NLL news, of course, is the playoff race. Four teams have clinched: Buffalo, Toronto in the East, Colorado and San Diego in the West. 9 wins should do the trick. So Halifax virtually clinched as well for the third spot in the East. Calgary looks like they're in pretty good shape for the third spot in the West at 8-7, holding a 2-game lead over Panther City for that final assured Western playoff berth. But the final couple of spots are very much up for grabs. Georgia is 8-7. Pretty good spot that they're sitting in, but they still have work to do. Philadelphia is at 8-8. Albany is 7-9, and they play each other this Saturday of week 20. So that's a huge game, obviously, for them to try to get in position, either to move up and get the fourth guaranteed spot in the East, or sorry, the fifth guaranteed spot in the East, or the fourth if they can catch Georgia, or to try and move over and earn the fourth seed in the West by having a better record than the fourth place team in the actual West division. And, you know, when you think about it, if you're the fourth seed in the East, you're playing most likely Buffalo. They're very close to clinching first overall. If you're the fourth seed in the West, you're playing Colorado or San Diego, very good teams, but probably not quite as intimidating as this year's Buffalo Bandits club. So I don't think teams are going to be too upset if they come fifth in the East, but are able to move over to the West for that final spot. Be interesting to see how that all plays out. Rochester is out with their 3-12 record. They're the only ones, though, who are officially mathematically eliminated. The other four teams are still mathematically in the hunt for a spot. 6-9, Panther City, 6-10, Vancouver, and even 5-10, Saskatchewan and New York. For all four of those, they're long shots, but they still have a shot. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, it'd be a fascinating array of results that have to happen for one of them to get in, but it is possible. And whatever, I mean, if you said, okay, this is the sequence of games of teams winning, teams losing that winds up happening, that is one among however many permutations and combinations there are. So it's really, in some ways, no less likely that one of these plays out than that the others, the more, you know, more the scenarios that people are more likely expecting. And you have to recognize also the teams that are lower in the standings are there for a reason. The teams ahead of them don't need as many things to go right for them to get in, but there's a shot. It's going to be interesting over these final few weeks of the NLL season. Stay tuned. My conversation with Cooper Perkins is coming up right after this. Joining me on LAX Beat, the play-by-play voice of the San Diego Seals and the mind behind laxmetrics.com, a site dedicated to NLL New Age stats, is Cooper Perkins. Welcome to LAX Beat.
Thanks for having me. Couldn't be more excited to hop on the show.
So I came across this. We were just talking off air before we started about how I saw something about it. I mean, I'd heard of you. Heard you doing games in San Diego with Mr. Acello, and always enjoy the broadcast. And then, but I didn't think of you as a lacrosse guy. And then I saw something. I think it was a Graham Perro tweet that we were talking about, that you and he had worked on a face-off post, which he'd actually done something on face-offs and correlation between winning face-offs and winning games for IL Indoor when he was with us a few years ago. And I was intrigued, and I've been following it, and I'm really curious. I've got a lot of questions, but first I just want to, I guess, ask you what was behind creating laxmetrics.com.
So you just kind of in passing there mentioned, didn't really see me as a lacrosse guy, and that's perfectly fair and reasonable because you're kind of right. I grew up in Southern California and I grew up playing the field game. So I love lacrosse in a big picture sense, but hadn't had a ton of exposure to box until starting to work with the Seals. But basically the idea came from being curious about other ways that we can talk about performance. So early on in the season for the Seals specifically, Jeremy Noble seemed to be the key piece in a prolific offense that had been missing in week one when they lost to Vancouver. And so my curiosity centered around whether there was a way that I could mathematically kind of prove that hypothesis that Jeremy Noble is having one of the more, you know, efficient seasons around the league. And so that led to kind of the very first genesis of what ended up becoming LAX Metrics, just kind of a simple question of, how can we look at efficiency and see about trying to put that into numbers? So that's where that starts.
And it's interesting because I noticed at the beginning of the year when Jeremy came in and played, and I mean, obviously he'd come in from Colorado and had an all right season last year, but this year when he rejoined the team after missing, it was just the first week, right?
That's correct. Yeah, it was a little bit of an ankle that came up in training camp, so they healthied him the first week, but he was back week two, and instantly things looked different.
And they looked really different. I mean, and it's funny how you think everyone talked about Dane Doby being the big addition, which, I mean, Dane Doby's a legend, and rightfully so, and he's going to have a huge impact. You know, Westberg and Austin Stotts, who was out for a while but came back, I think, earlier than I expected, I think most people expected, that were outside of the team in his, you know, his inner circle. But the Noble thing, I don't know if anybody really thought, well, Jeremy was out, he's going to come back in week two, what a difference it'll make. But I felt like you could just watching the games, you could see a difference. And it sounds like you were struck by the same thing, that you could see the difference. The stats suggested there was something going on because he had a ton of assists. Is that kind of where things took off from?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I think my big thing with the origins of LAX Metrics where assists is the category of traditional box score statistics that irritates me the most, because they could tell us a lot or they could tell us nothing. And so in Jeremy's case, my curiosity was, do these numbers in fact tell us something that we can prove with our eyes, or are there a lot of hollow numbers in here and I'm just convincing myself of something as I watch them play and score more goals? So You're totally right that's where that comes from.
And that's interesting when you talk about seeing some numbers, seeing some things, and wondering if you're convincing yourself. Because I do a lot of, I mean, I'm every week right now, I'm updating my records pursuit column. And, you know, there's so many interesting things. And I sit there and break down. And one of the things you find is that when you get into your own little world, like I'm not even assuming, I know that you're doing all this work. You must be diving into little holes like I do, where you start following one thing and that leads to another. And then you're like, oh, I have to add this to the story. And then there's this. And you start getting into these little circles of looking at the statistics, and you really can't convince yourselves of things. And it's got to be a balance of looking at the numbers, which you're obviously doing a lot of, and watching the games, which you're obviously doing as well. But to me, it's the eye test and the numbers combined that is the real key.
You know, I totally agree with that. And, you know, I think from my position, I'm more equipped to approach things with a numbers first eye, as opposed to an eye test first, because that's kind of the nature of, you know, not being a box lacrosse guy through and through for years and years. I'm very aware of what I don't know. And I've been very fortunate working in the SEALs organization. The people there, you know, Steve Govett, Patrick Merrill, Bill Greer, Josh Sanderson, have just been so incredibly generous with their wealths of knowledge. And so I think that my learning curve has been shortened up significantly by just being able to have conversations with some insanely smart lacrosse people. But as you're saying, it's completely true. We can convince ourselves of things just by looking at numbers or just by looking at the eye test. And there's usually a truth somewhere in the middle. So for me, I try and be conscientious of the fact that my expertise is going to come originally from the numbers side, but that doesn't in any way serve as a substitute for, you know, the eye test and you know, what we see when we watch, because, you know, they're complementary items, and in certain situations they may disagree with one another, and it becomes a question of what are our takeaways from those disagreements that are interesting, right? Like, that's numbers that tell us exactly what we see aren't all that interesting, but numbers that don't agree with what we see are the ones that require a second look. And I think that's what I wanted to try and pursue with Lax Metrics, is to find those numbers that don't necessarily match up with the eye test and then explore them. They might not be right. They might not tell us exactly what we think initially, but to try and open that kind of Pandora's box of exploration into things beyond the eye test, you know, because there's such a strong culture of, you know, viewing and watching and digesting lacrosse among lacrosse people, that it felt to me that perhaps the addition of a little bit more empirical, you know, study and evidence would be a worthwhile contribution. I think that's what I'm trying to pursue with it.
I'm Stephen Stabb, and I am joined by Cooper Perkins, the man behind laxmetrics.com, here on LaxBeat. And we are going to dive a bit more in, because I found one of the things, interesting things, reading the blog that's part of the site. And everyone, you should just go while you're listening, even go to laxmetrics.com and check it out. But try to reserve yourself, because you're going to get sucked in and you're going to be starting to look at things and going from page to page and saying, oh yeah, that makes sense. And oh no, I don't get that. And there's going to be so many things will come up for you. But so, you know, maybe open it up, but try to stay paying attention to us a little bit, because we like to feel like we're an important part of this whole thing as well, in terms of the conversation about it. But it is a fascinating page. And following the blog, I noticed one of the first ones you talked about ranking the players. You've ranked all the players in the league on these statistical models that you've developed. And you talk about how a lot of it comes from stats that are readily available in the box scores. And then there are other stats that you've created. And I want to dive into them a bit in a little while. But you mentioned that there were some that were really surprising for you, and there were others that really seemed to reinforce what you were thinking going into it from what you've seen. And I'm curious what the balance of that was. Like, were there more surprises where you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize this guy was having, based on this, that big of an impact? Or were there more where you're like, yeah, that's what I figured?
You know, I think that really gets broken down into a couple of different buckets. There aren't a ton of surprises among the league stars, and there aren't a ton of surprises among kind of the organizational filler or the guys that are young, still trying to carve out roles, haven't really gotten their full opportunity. The surprises generally don't lie with them so much as that middle tier of players that is about 75 to 100 of them, who are not going to be the first or second options on offense and likely aren't going to be the primary or secondary guys on defense, but still are super valuable pieces on the floor and wanting to figure out a way to measure some of that, for example, off-ball contribution on an offensive end was a subject of quite a bit of surprises. I mean, one player that comes to mind who I wrote about a couple of weeks ago is Thomas Hogarth from Rochester. He's essentially established himself as like the Mark Matthews of setting picks and drawing penalties. So what he does in the traditional box score has some value, right? He'll score you some goals and he'll dish out an assist here and there, but really his value is not communicated all that well by the traditional box score. Same thing goes for a guy like Larson Sundown from New York. He's had a fantastic rookie season just by virtue of the traditional metrics. And when you start to look into these invented stats that then are the basis for some of our deeper metrics, you see just how good of a season he's had in these very specific areas. So I think that the surprises have less to do with guys who are in that top elite echelon of players or the household names. You know, more so it's guys who we don't think of as the first two or three names when we look at a roster. And Jeremy Noble's kind of that guy for San Diego, going back to the earlier part of our conversation, right? I mean, you think Dane Doby, Westberg, but Jeremy Noble's probably not going to be before third, maybe even fourth, depending on how you want to look at that roster. So it's the guys like him that don't garner the same attention, both with the eye test and with like the league stat pack. That's where the surprises tend to lie the most.
We actually started a column on IL Indoor several years ago, because I remember, I mean, I've done the three stars every week. So I pick the top three stars of the week and do a bunch of honorable mentions, but there are guys that wouldn't really fit in. I include defenders. I try and include some grinders, but it's always challenging. You're trying to go through the whole league and look at everybody from every game. And I thought, you know, we need a separate one for guys who are grinders, who do a role and, you know, or play a big role, but it's not going to always show up on the sheet. It's not always going to be obvious. And we got that rolling. And I actually kind of thought of that because I was watching Chad Culp play. And he would have been before you were really, like you said, you're kind of relatively recent to the box game, but he was the glue guy, the grinder guy for years in the league for a handful of teams. It carries over today. Hogarth's a great example, and I've seen that. I actually remember watching Thomas Hogarth with the Peterborough Lakers in MSL when he was moved from defense transition up to forward, and the impact that he had opening space for guys like, you know, at the time, like Sean Evans, and I'm trying to remember if John Grant was still there. It might have been after him, but some, you know, some amazingly talented players, and he would make such a difference. And there are guys, I mean, Marty Dinsdale is a guy that's always talked of in that vein. So many players, and it's pretty cool to see a way of quantifying some of that. And I'm curious, I know you've developed some analytics, some different stats, which I really want to dive into. But first, I want to ask you the big question that I had a few weeks ago reading when you came out and said Westberg right now is the MVP of this league. And I hadn't thought of that. Wes is a very good player. I obviously recognize what he'd done for the Seals, but I just thought, honestly, my first thought was, oh, this is a San Diego guy who's saying, hey, everyone pay attention to Westberg. And then I looked into it. I read your column. I was like, oh no, he's actually really thinking about this. I still don't know that I was convinced. I think I was on Ryan Lee at that point when he was having way at the top. Now I'm definitely on Dane Smith. I mean, he's been incredible, but I'm curious a bit more about how you came up with Westberg as your MVP at the time and who's your MVP right now. Maybe start with the latter.
Sure. I mean, I think that at this point, Dane Smith is about as clear cut of an MVP as there can be in the league. I mean, what he's done is nothing short of jaw dropping and record breaking in multiple senses. That's the beauty of writing. Things either age well or they age poorly. And on February 18th, when that article came out, it was a different kind of season. Credit to Dane Smith, because he has just been nothing short of phenomenal in the 2 months that have transpired since then. And, you know, that's one thing that I tried to lean into in writing that piece, was that, you know, this could look a whole lot different in a couple of weeks. And that's exactly what's happened. So I think that I'd have to agree with you that he's, you know, my MVP at this point in the season. And I don't know that there's anything that anyone can do at this point to overtake him either. I think that if he sat for the final, you know, two games, I don't think it would matter. I think that that's probably about as clear cut as it could get in an MVP race. But the methodology of getting to that was trying to figure out what we want to describe as most valuable. So you're right, this is a question that transcends sports and goes through so many different avenues of, you know, what is most valuable? What is most valuable? And there's really not a good answer. There are a lot of okay answers, some of which can work in concert with each other to make a slightly better answer. But the answer to most valuable really isn't super great. So the tack that I tried to take was, well, if we have all of these metrics and we see how players perform across the spectrum of them, we can get an idea of where they kind of fall compared to their peers. And so that's where, you know, percentile rankings go a long way towards determining that. So in the case of that article, we used most of the components that go into what I call the MOP score, the most outstanding player score, which is kind of the lax metrics version of a pro football focus grade on a 0 to 100 scale. So it basically takes the average percentile grade that a player has across 8 different categories. It spits out a number that's somewhere between 1 and 100, and then you can rank players based on that. So now, while Westbrook did not rank first in that, he was, I think, top 3 or 4 at the time, the performance that he had laid out across the different metrics, I use radar charts to try and communicate this visually, and I think fairly effectively. I'm a sucker for radar charts personally, so I just thought it was kind of fun to be able to do that. But what I tried to take as my approach to most valuable at that time was, who is the most valuable in multiple areas to the best teams? And at that point, San Diego was, 7-2, 6-1, something in that vicinity. So very much competing for that claim of the top team in the league. And Westbrook was doing a series of things at an extremely high level across a whole array of different categories. Dane Smith, however, at that time, and I tried to acknowledge this in the article, and I think in hindsight, it might have been a little bit of a mistake on my part because I didn't think it would hold up. But I acknowledge that Dane Smith was so much better in a couple of categories than the rest of his peers that it didn't accurately show up in percentile rankings. So you can be the, you know, in the top 1% of something in a couple different ways. And whatever that, you know, nominal number looks like, it doesn't matter. If you're in the top 1%, you're the top 1%. In Dane Smith's case, you know, he was in the top 1% doing things 50% better than his peers in that category or two. So it was a breakdown to some extent in the methodology behind creating the MOP score that takes the average across multiple categories of percentile scores, because it didn't have proper respect for just how much better in a single category that player was than his peers. Now, it's the only instance in which that's happened throughout the entire season in any category. He is the only outlier that has found a way to break that
methodology. Can I jump in? Sorry, yeah. As an example, I'm thinking, as I'm hearing you talk about this, it makes me think of, say, the Madden football game, Madden video game, and the highest rating you can get is 99, right? I believe.
Right.
So there are probably a handful of guys who are 99, but there could be one guy who's way ahead of all of them, but he's still a 99 like the rest of them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a similar, kind of a good analogy, right?
Exactly. And Westbrook is your 99 that has high 80s in almost every category and a couple low 90s. And Dane Smith is your 99 that has mostly high 80s, low 90s, and then one or two pure 99 scores that contribute to that. And those individual categories for him as a passer are so much better than his peers that it really does make a significant difference, even though that overall, you know, Madden style rating of a 99 wouldn't tell us that, right?
And when you talk about how he's doing passing, I mean, he's already, with 2 games left, as we know, he's already set the single season assist record. But as you were getting at earlier, you were saying, you know, assists can be vexing in a box score because they don't necessarily mean anything. And while they should always be listed first assist first and then second assist, that's not even always the case. Occasionally they'll get flipped. So you really have to watch everything to know, not just if they're a primary assist, but if they're what you call a first order assist. And I want you to break down a bit what you mean by the different kinds of assists, including, and we'll, you know, maybe we'll break it up a little bit because it is, I'm very aware of, I don't want it to be too mathy for folks, but I think this is really interesting when you talk about, you know, primary assists and first order assists and second order assists and pick assists, which are all really interesting parts of the game. So can you just kind of break down the kinds of assists that you keep track of?
Absolutely. You know, the origin of that was a conversation that I had with Steve Govett and Doug Locker about how different kinds of assists tell you more in a game than others, and that there are some second assists that are awesome, that are super valuable to making a play happen, and then there are a lot of second assists that really don't tell you anything and that are just kind of stat padding. So what I wanted to do was try and separate these things out. Initially, the idea was we'll just separate it out cleanly into first assists and second assists, and it'll just be going through and separating those out from the league's box score stats. But the more I watched, the less convinced I became that a first assist really is valuable in all cases. A good example being after a transition situation, a defense gets settled, and while making their personnel changes, the ball handling defenseman flips the ball to an offensive player who then dodges at the goal and scores. He's going to get a first assist on that without doing anything of functional value and creating the opportunity other than just not turning the ball over. So first order assists are trying to remove those. First order assists are what I call deliberately facilitative. So these are instances in which players actively are passing, looking to set their teammates up for opportunities. Now, there's a bit of subjectivity to that, which is not ideal, but like all of these things, we have to exercise judgment to some extent. So what we're looking for is players passing to set up their teammates. Now, first order chances can go one of two ways. They can be converted into goals and become first order assists, or they can go unconverted and be saved by the goalie or just, you know, hum over the crossbar. And those first order chances that do not end up in goals become unrealized assists because they have the same value from the passer's side, just without the final result. So in the same way that in baseball, we think of batters being able to control only how hard they hit the ball. Once the ball leaves the bat, there's nothing that they can do. So the batting average doesn't tell you a whole lot because there may be a lot of luck as to where the ball falls. There might be really poor luck as to where the ball falls. And first order chances are similar in that way because a great pass still may end up being a save or may end up missing the goal entirely. And we don't have any way traditionally to quantify those fantastic passes. Now, in the eye test department, that's something where coaches and fans and teammates have been tuned into for decades. This is not in any way a new idea. It's just something that doesn't have a place on paper until recently. Second order,
it's an idea that's being applied more universally in your stats.
Exactly. So it's not inventing an idea so much as it is taking an existing idea and just putting it onto paper and doing kind of the grunt work of aggregating those moments across the league and recording them on paper as opposed to having kind of a building wide acknowledgement that you know, that was a great pass. Now let's move on.
Right.
Which is fine, you know, but if it's something that we can quantify, if we just take a little bit of time to record it, it proves to be pretty valuable in telling us who great passers are because you never know what the luck looks like when the ball leaves a passer's stick. And you could make a case that, you know, the best passes are always going to lead to a goal. And that might be true. I'm not going to argue about that, but there are a lot of great passes that we don't recognize because they don't end up as assists. And there are a lot of assists that really don't tell us who's actively facilitating quality opportunities. Yeah. There is a convergence of that where at a certain threshold, the more assists that a player has is going to be at least somewhat proportional with the number of chances he's creating. We do see quite a strong correlation with that when you crunch the numbers on the lax metrics side. The second order assists are a little bit different, a little bit more complicated because those are far fewer than the first order variety. So a valuable a truly valuable second assist is one that moves the defense. So a cross floor pass would be a good example. A top, across the top leading to a good pass in tight around the crease, that's going to be a second order assist because it put a specific kind of pressure that while the pass might not have been actively trying to create a chance, it was actively trying to put pressure on the defense, leading to a situation that then resulted in a goal. We usually only see like two or three of those a game, but and especially more in horizontal offenses. So there's a bit of a structure component that goes into that. But rather than just trying to separate out all of the first assists and second assists, I wanted to try and really create a category that would demonstrate the value of truly excellent secondary passing. The guys who are seeing a couple steps ahead in a play, making those passes and setting up their teammates to set up teammates, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it strikes me a couple of things from that whole conversation is that your work will do when, and you know, as you develop it, and I'm sure there are tweaks you're going to be making and ways that you want to, you know, look back at like this season and be like, okay, this really seemed to work. This I might want to adjust a little, but it feels like you're getting there. But one thing that really stands out to me is it would kind of eliminate, or not eliminate, but create put less emphasis on who you're playing with necessarily. Because I mean, if you, for instance, throw a pass to Austin Stotts, there's a very good chance he's going to score a goal. So if you're playing with Austin Stotts, you could get a lot of assists. If you say throw a pass to me, there's virtually no chance I'm going to score a goal. And I mean, there, I could have used an NLL guy as an example, but you know what I mean? Like, so you could make great passes to me and I'm not going to beat a lot of NLL goalies very often. So whereas if you're just, you can just toss a ball to Austin Stotts. So that's where, to me, it seems like the first order assist and really paying attention to, and the unrealized assist, I think, is the really important point there, that that can make a difference in kind of evening out, leveling out the playing field. So guys who are playing with a lot of talent don't necessarily just get a ton more recognition for good passes they make because those people happen to score. And of course, like you said, there's always the variable, well, was it really that great a pass if the guy didn't score on it? Like, maybe it wasn't quite where he wanted it. Maybe, you know, different things. Whereas, you know, we all know, though, if you're playing with a bunch of super talented scorers, you're going to get more assists than if you're playing with some grinders.
Absolutely. And, you know, like Sean Evans is a good example. The first half of the season playing in Rochester, what I call his first order conversion rate, which is what percentage of those first order chances actually turn into goals, was exceedingly low. And a lot of that tracks with, you know, some of who he was playing with and, you know, the lack of really elite finishing around him, but we could still see week by week that he was piling up these excellent passes that in another context, you know, had he been playing for Halifax earlier in the season, or had he been at one of the previous stops in his career, may have been commensurate with, you know, higher assist numbers, things of that variety. So that he's a great example for that specifically. You also mentioned pick assists, which I think are fairly self-explanatory, but the one tweak that I wanted to introduce to them as a concept was I feel like the value of a pick doesn't necessarily just have to be for a score, right? So we think a lot about guys shooting around picks and immediately off of picks, but there's just as much value to a pick that frees up a passer to make the pass that leads to the goal. So the pick assists apply both to the scorer and to the facilitator. So in a pick and roll situation, you actually might have a guy assisting on his own goal. We don't score that as a pick assist, but in theory, it would be one if we wanted to. That, now that's totally an arbitrary choice that I made that maybe in the future I rethink, but it seems a little bit bizarre to be assisting on your own goal. In general, though, it really has more to do with freeing up guys to score and freeing up guys to make passes and trying to create a category that includes both of those. We could separate them out, but I don't think that there are enough picks that immediately lead to goals that would allow us to do that without creating a couple of fairly thin and lean categories. Like, no one wants a leaderboard with a guy that has five.
Yeah.
That, you know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of a lame stat if it's structured in that way.
You've mentioned a few times, or you've said a few times, you know, we and us. Do you have people helping you with this?
So that's actually a good question. The answer is not really. It is my project. I do all of the actual work behind it, but I want to give credit in kind of the big general sense for people who inspire me with their ideas. I've had a lot of really helpful, interesting conversations with countless different people who I would consider as contributors to the development of Laxmetrics. So I think it would be disingenuous and quite self-impressed to give myself credit for all of it, when in reality, I'm more of just the grinder that puts in the time to build it out. But the ideas, at least some of them, not all of them, a lot of the ideas come from outside sources that, you know, inspire me to answer questions. Everything that the Laxmetrics is about is exploring curiosity and answering questions. So if a question comes up in those conversations that I have, you know, I would consider that to be, you know, a metric or a solution inspired by that individual's question. So, for example, the conversation I had with Steve Govett and Doug Locker serves as the inspiration for the differentiation between first order and second order assists. I'm not, you know, their names aren't on the website, but as far as I see it, they are contributors. So the we, I call it whatever you will. That's the extent of the assistance, the actual manual, you know, watching games, recording stats, crunching numbers, maintaining spreadsheets, all of that. That is me personally.
So that was my next question, because I envision you to do this sitting and going through every game, every play, and having to sit there and assign the goals are obvious. Like you said, your goals, assists, all this, the box score stuff is pretty straightforward, but you've got to sit there and assign all the, you know, just differentiate first order and second order assists, assign pick assists, unrealized assists, all that. Like, how long does that take you every week to do that?
You know, I think between watching the games, which I do at a significantly faster clip, there's a lot of kind of fat in games that you're able to move through fairly quickly. But also it gets slowed down having to go back and rewatch certain parts a couple of times. Between that and the general website maintenance, distributing new numbers, all of that has to be done manually. So it probably is in the vicinity of about 10 to 12 hours of work per week that usually gets done on Sundays and Mondays. So this week, for example, is a great week for me because there weren't any Sunday games, which means I was able to get stuff done on Sunday and have fresh numbers out on Monday as opposed to Tuesday like I usually do. But usually it's somewhere in that window of 35 to 40 minutes per game, and then about 2 hours worth of just kind of raw website maintenance.
Everyone was so excited when there was a Monday night game. Everyone was, oh my goodness, Monday night, look, this is great. That must have driven you nuts.
You know, it was funny. I was sitting there and watching it, but I'm not confident enough to score the games while they're happening in real time. Like, it has to be done as a postmortem.
Yeah. So I was just able to pause and rewind.
Exactly. So I'm just sitting there watching it in real time, waiting for it to end. But I mean, it's fun. I'd rather have the game and have something, you know, to be excited about and interested in, and be thinking about questions that I have, you know, as they pertain to the game, than not have one. But the logistics and the timing of that is, as you indicate, are far from favorable on my end.
There's one other thing I want to touch on. And I mean, there, honestly, we could talk about this for hours, but I feel like I need to spend more time on the site just getting familiar with things. I mean, I feel like I've got, from reading it and looking at it, I've got a reasonable grip on what you're doing, but I feel like I need to get more familiar and spend more time. But the one thing is goalies. We haven't talked about, and obviously that's a whole different kettle of fish. How do you deal with the goalies?
So the goalies are interesting. I don't do anything invented with the goalies. So there aren't any stats currently that I'm tracking during the game and compiling on like a recorded basis. I think I would like to change that in the future. I'd be interested what your feedback is. I think that there would be something really interesting in essentially a goalie's breakaway percentage. That's something that we don't really have. We don't really have an idea of how many breakaways, you know, a goalie faces. What is a breakaway? Like, how do we define it for the purposes of that question? Yeah. So that's one thing that I think I would be interested in exploring going forward, but not for this season. So everything about the goalies is built out of the traditional box score and expanding the traditional box score using, you know, math and organizational methods. So there are a couple of things that are invented there. There's one kind of the holy grail stat is, you know, the wins above replacement. How do you quantify player performance into wins? And I had a formula for that for goalies that I think was satisfactory for most of the season. But upon reconsidering, I decided that it has a couple of changes that need to be made. It just so happens that that's in concert with developing the same thing for position players. So I'm not confident and comfortable enough in those numbers as they currently are to publish them. But with goalies, until I come up with an idea of things that can be scored while watching the games, it's a unique challenge in that it's purely built around expanding the existing box score using, you know, math and organization.
I tell you, it's fascinating stuff, and I'd definitely like to have some conversations about it. The one thing for me that immediately jumps out for goalies, you talked about the breakaway percentage. Well, I guess two things. One is, how many breakaways do they create as well? You know, involve a passing metric for goalies.
That's brilliant.
Because, right? Because I
totally hadn't crossed my mind. Yeah, that's a brilliant idea.
Christian Del Bianco had four assists last weekend in the one game.
Right? Yeah, I mean,
that plays a role. You know,
these are the kinds of ideas that when I say it's a we, not an I, you're probably not going to sit here, you know, every Sunday or Monday with me and help me keep score on all these goalie breakaways that happen next year. But I'm still going to give you credit as someone who inspired the idea, because it, you know, it came from Steven Stamp, and you know, I think that's valuable. So when the we comes in, you can be a part of it moving forward, my friend.
I'm part of the we. That feels good.
There we go.
The other one, I think, for goalies is, and this would not be nearly so easy to quantify, is quality of shots. Because I look at someone like Zach Higgins this year, who I think has faced an extremely high quality of shots in general, like in a lot of games. So his numbers have been good to okay, but there are times when I think, wow, him having like a 780 or 790 save percentage in that game with the quality of shots he faced is probably akin to an 810 or an 820 for some guys who are seeing shots they're more comfortable with in games.
You are so spot on. And this is where I'm going to step on my soapbox just for a moment and rail on what I think the league needs to do. The league needs play-by-play data that is recorded throughout the game, like the NCAA does with men's college lacrosse and women's college lacrosse. Once you have that play-by-play data that is tracked, you have everything you could want. You have spray charts for where shots originate from. We could then explore that question that you're posing, because we would have the relevant data necessary, you know, to create some kind of stat that tells us about the shot quality or the shot difficulty level, things of that variety. Once the league can commit to doing something like that, be it either manual or using like TrackMan hardware that they use in baseball to essentially track everything that's going on in a projectile setting with all the various, you know, metrics of physics behind them. Until we have those numbers that have been tracked in every building for every team for every shot, that's an extremely difficult thing to do. But we're at a point in our technology and these programs exist in other arenas that are adjacent to the NLL, where I don't think it's that big of a leap. And something that I and other people who I've talked to, you know, would love to see. And I think it would help us a lot take the next step in creating really high level analytics in lacrosse that go well beyond lax metrics, because the limits of what lax metrics can do are, it's fairly low ceiling. And, you know, my creativity and your creativity can only take us so far in the things that we can execute without having true play-by-play data available to us. Once that becomes available, then you have the people like the Graham Perros of the world who can aggregate that all into a database and come up with an infinite number of possibilities. I mean, it truly is limitless. That's my final thought on that subject. But once you get the play-by-play data, there is no question that we can't answer.
That is really interesting, you know, that you talk about where it can go in the future, because that obviously is one of my next questions, is where does this go in the future? What vision do you have for Laxmetrics? Because it's obviously, Cooper, such an interesting topic and you're putting so much work into it. You have to have a vision for this leading somewhere further.
You know, is it a bad thing if I say that I don't?
No.
I mean, I think that in this world, everything, so much of what we watch and witness and experience is built around doing things as a means to an end. And that's okay. There's nothing inherently bad about that. But there are opportunities in life to engage with things as ends in and of themselves. And so I kind of see the Laxmetrics little ecosystem as an end to itself. To me, it's something that is interesting and enriching and allows me to explore my curiosities. And I hope that there are just a few other people that have similar curiosities that I can cater to. In large part, it truly is just a project of passion and interest. It comes from a place of wanting to know more and just looking for answers and looking for questions that need answers. And it's a forum to explore those things, both through numbers and through writing. And I think that that's a tremendously interesting opportunity. And for me, I think in the big picture, I would love to see it become something that is maybe more accessible to people. I think baseball is a good example of a sport where the lexicon of advanced stats has truly become mainstream. I don't think that Laxmetrics is going to be what drives advanced stats and analytics into the mainstream of lacrosse, but it very well may be a stepping stone in that direction. And I think that that's something that is worth aspiring towards, because the more empirical our understanding of sports are, the more educated conversations we can have. And if we're having educated conversations, then we're having fun. And, you know, this is an opportunity that has brought me to speak with you and have a conversation that we're both interested in about statistics and lacrosse and numbers. And I think that's a conversation that can be had many, many times over with countless different people. So the big picture goal is really just to advance the cause a little bit and hope to raise some curiosity and some other people, and maybe put some numbers out there that create some, either a little bit of fervor, maybe some outrage here and there. And I think I've learned my lesson though on picking MVP winners in mid-February. I think that's probably not something that we'll do again.
Yeah, that is a perfectly cromulent answer. And for our non-Simpsons fans listening, that's a positive thing. It means it's perfectly satisfactory and there's nothing wrong with that answer. Are you a Simpsons guy? You know, Cromulent?
You know, the Simpsons are a little bit before my time. Not. I don't want to say that entirely, because the Simpsons aren't really before anybody's time.
Right. And they just keep going.
Yeah, exactly. They just keep going. But I was a Simpsons guy for maybe 5 or 6 years there in my early teens. But admittedly, the reference did kind of glaze over my head there just a second ago.
Okay, I wanted to make sure everyone got it. That was I can't even remember the episode. It was a good episode. It was the same one where they talked about someone's spirit embiggening the spirit of the average person, which is another great word that the Simpsons managed to coin. So not that we're going to get on a Simpsons kick. I'm Stephen Stamp. I'm joined by Cooper Perkins, the man behind Laxmetrics.com. I do strongly encourage everyone to go and check out the website. Again, it is, that's a lax, L-A-X, metrics, M-E-T-R-I-C-S.com. And there's a lot of interesting stuff there. And it feels like there's going to be a lot more interesting stuff coming as you just keep adding. Because I guess that's one other factor, right? Is you've been doing this for a bit, but especially with some of the created statistics, the sample size is still fairly limited through, you know, how much of a season you've been doing. That you said, you know, you hope it contributes to the development of advanced statistics in the lexicon. And that's one way that happens, right? Is by just developing a bigger data set.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've accessed all of the data from 2005 to 2020, just, you know, everything that's available. But when you talk law of large numbers, basically that whole window of 17 seasons, 18 seasons, including this year, is probably barely enough to be considered a large enough sample for some of these more advanced statistics. So I look forward to continuing to build the sample pool that we have and, you know, also expand it. I'm curious to see how things will look next year, as I have every intention of, you know, continuing this next season, because I think it's a much easier project in a year two as opposed to a year one. This is an idea that really didn't metastasize until, you know, mid-December. So it took about a month and a half of just raw watching old games and going through one after another to get caught up in order to then publish, you know, the numbers. Starting just from a week one in future seasons is going to make this a significantly easier project, which frees up more mental bandwidth for, you know, exploring other possibilities and continuing to build out that lexicon.
I think you should get an intern.
You know, I'd be open to it. I'd be open to it. I don't know exactly how I'd go about that or what interns interested in niche lacrosse analytics, but if you know of any, pass them my contact info.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's got to be some around. I've got some great interns working with me this year that I was fortunate to get on board. Where right now I'm working on a documentary that's going to be coming out quite soon, actually. I think it's going to be super cool. I've got a couple of students from Conestoga College who are the filmmakers on that, who are working really hard on it. And I've got folks helping out with Blackspeed and with Lacrosse Link, and it's really helpful. I mean, there's a certain amount, obviously, it's work for you to show interns what you want and what you need done, and you know, there's work on it, but boy, you find somebody who's a real stats guy who wants to dive into this, and I'm sure there have to be somebody there. There are programs around that, you know, can provide internship help, and it just seems honestly ideal. Like, I was half kidding, because I wasn't, I mean, it's kind of a shock response. I'll get an intern, but I think someone who's really into it would be such a boon for you. And I think someone who's really into it would love being part of the project.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, if that person exists, we've got seven and a half months to find them. I think that'd be great. And, you know, as I said, when I gave my answer about the I versus we, the more people that are interested, the more interesting ideas can be explored. So there's a real opportunity there for an interested individual or two or however many to be a part of developing things that currently don't exist, in addition to, you know, working with some stuff that I've created. And, you know, there's credit to be had, as if hopefully if anything has been learned in this episode, it's that I'm not going to steal credit from you.
You can be part of the we.
Exactly. Happy to make you part of the we and give you an opportunity to explore your own curiosities.
I'd like to wrap up by just checking, because, you know, you've put all this work in, you've got these numbers that are speaking towards who's playing really well, who's contributing the most to their teams. I wouldn't mind going through the kind of key end of year categories and just seeing who you've got right now. We've already gone over MVP. You're clear it's Dane Smith, as I think everyone is. Defender of the Year, because and we haven't really got into it, and we're not going to go into all the defensive metrics at this point, because there's just so much. And I just really, people just go to laxmetrics.com and read it and check it all out. But Defender of the Year and Transition Player, Defender, what do your numbers tell you? And do you agree with them from what you've seen?
So my numbers tell me for Defender, it should be either Mitch Desnoux or Brad Cree. I personally would agree. I have Zach Currier as the Transition Player of the Year, and actually he would be my number two for MVP as well. I think in a non-Dane Smith season, Zach Currier, especially should Calgary manage to make the playoffs given how they started, I think that in a normal season, he very well might be the number one in the MVP race. But I think he is a runaway Transition Player of the Year, and I probably, if I had a vote, which I do not, would be voting for Mitch Desnoux as the Defensive Player of the Year.
I'm right with you on Courier. I think he's been exceptional. I think there have been some great transition performances. I think I still think of Jordan McIntosh, and who I think has been terrific all year. Reed Bowering as a rookie has been pretty unbelievable, but he's not at that level yet, consistently week to week at quite the same level. For Defender, I had Brian Shanahan on a few weeks ago when we hit the 2/3 point of the season, I think, and we talked about it. And for Defender, I was leaning at that point towards Kyle Rubish, and sure. I still might be on Rubish, but boy, Mitch Desnoux has gotten better and better as the season's gone on.
Well, and the numbers say that you wouldn't in any way be wrong to side with Rubish in that. You know, those are kind of the three guys that the numbers like the most, Desnoux, Cree, mm-hmm. and Rubish. So as far as I'm concerned, there's not a wrong answer in that group, right? Because lax metrics is only half of our conversation. The other half right. does genuinely have to come from the eye test. But I think in the transition category, you probably have Reed Bowering as a finalist, although I think he's a distant second or third to, mm-hmm. to Zach Currier. Just the level of the season Zach Currier's had is just mind-numbing and shocking. Still, you know, 15 games in, week after week after week, the numbers he's putting up, the impact in the game he's having. My favorite stat of his actually is one that you can only find via lax metrics, and it's that he has drawn 8 penalties this year, which is far and away the most of any dedicated defensive player. So wow. I think that that does tells us an interesting piece about how much of a problem he is, because he does, you know, the things that we know well, but in transition, he's also such a handful that he's drawing penalties with regularity. And that's something that no one else in his position really does. And to me, that's just beyond fascinating, right?
Yeah, I think that's amazing. And that's, like I said, I've obviously spent some time on the site, and I've looked at some things, and I've got a feel for what it's saying in that, but my research into it is far from exhaustive at this point. I was not aware of him having that kind of impact on the drawn penalties, which is, how does that compare to some of the forwards? There must be forwards who are drawing a lot more just because there's so many more opportunities, but does he compare with some of the, like, even mid-range forwards in that area?
It's better than that. Actually, it would rank him in the top 15 of forwards.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. The league leader is DeHogan Anacoke at 14. So drawing penalties is an interesting one because there is also some subjectivity that goes into that. We do not consider, you know, things like illegal substitutions to be drawable penalties. Generally speaking, we don't consider roughing to be drawable penalties. There are exceptions to that. And in some instances, I do genuinely think a player will goad another into taking a penalty. And in the event that they aren't offsetting penalties, that individual does deserve credit for a drawn penalty. But most of these come from holding, things of that variety that are visibly drawn by the effort of that player, be it cutting, handling the ball, what have you. But so drawn penalties is something that's really a bit of a niche statistic. And for Zach Currier, he's not just the best among defense and transition guys. He's one of the best in the league.
That's amazing. We should wrap up with goalie too. Is that cut and dried, or is it, I feel like there's some contenders.
I think you're 1,000% right. And I'm actually not sure that that one's settled yet. I think that you have a strong case to be made for probably 5 or 6 different goaltenders. And I think in the last, you know, 2 to 3 games, we're going to have a clear idea. If I had to pick my top 3 right now, it'd probably be Matt Vince, Nick Rose, and Dylan Ward. I think the player with the most to gain in the last couple of weeks is Dylan Ward. If Colorado finishes strong and really grabs that number one seed in the West, I don't think you can point a finger at anyone else as being more important for that run that they've been on down the stretch. And, you know, obviously the offense has taken a bit of a load off of him at times, and the numbers might not be as spectacular as they've been in the past. But really, I think this is an eye test issue to some extent, that I think what he does for them and continues to do very well might make him my number one. But granted, with 2 weeks left to go, there's still a lot of room for, you know, both Matt Vince and Nick Rose, and, you know, Frank Siliano and Dougie Jamison aren't, you know, all that far out of there as well. So it's a really fun one, because I feel like we have pretty clear answers on a handful of things, but that's one category where you could pick 1 of 6 and I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, we're going to have more conversations down the road, but I think we'll wrap it up for the show for now. But Cooper Perkins, San Diego Seals play-by-play announcer and the man behind laxmetrics.com. Thanks so much for coming on LaxBeat. And, you know, we'll make sure we have you on once in a while to delve deeper into what the extended numbers of the advanced metrics can tell us about what we're seeing and think we're seeing on the floor.
Well, Stephen, it's an absolute pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity and the platform to come on and talk about it. It has been nothing short of a joy for me. So thank you. Be well, and cheers to many more conversations, hopefully.
All right. Thank you very much to Cooper Perkins for coming on the show. I hope everyone enjoyed that as much as I did. It's a pretty deep dive. There's still so much more that you can get. Go to laxmetrics.com. It is honestly really interesting stuff. It has taken me a while of kind of moving around the site, trying to figure some things out to get a feel for it. There's still plenty of stuff that I don't really have a great grip on in terms of what it all means, but that's, as Cooper was saying, that's a lot of the fun, is informing conversations that we can have amongst ourselves to try and get a deeper look and a more nuanced understanding of who is doing what in the National Lacrosse League. I think it's some really fascinating stuff. So thank you so much to Cooper for being there and for making me part of the team. I'm part of the we that he talked about when he was referring to the work that has gone into the site. So that was pretty fun to be included in that because of a suggestion that I made, as you heard, about goalie assists, or breakaways created by goalies. So that's pretty cool. And I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you to Cooper. Thank you to you, Lacrosse Ferns, for being with here. And thank you to Scotty Comer for the theme music, as always, for LaxBeat, and to Logan Borthwick, my intern and editor at the show right now, for putting this all together and getting it ready for you, my lacrosse friends, to enjoy. We'll see you next week.